the first thing before you buy anything is to have the attitude of being a contrarian. And that is my single biggest piece of advice I give to every new investor into the market. And to be a contrarian means to be opposite to groupthink. And if you can do that continuously through the crypto market, you'll be successful.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. My name's Rick Nusky. I am your host. And for everybody supporting the show and being around for a while, thank you very much for your ongoing support. And for those of you who are new here today, welcome. Now, I know that you're in for a surprise, a treat, because on today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming author and co-founder of Digital Wealth Group, Sidel Sierra. Welcome to the show, Sidel.
Thanks, Rick. Absolute pleasure to be here today.
It's great to have you here. Now, you and I are going to be talking about your latest book, All Time High, The Power of Cryptocurrencies and How to Invest the Right Way, along with why everyday people should look at crypto investments as a vehicle for creating financial freedom. So there is a lot to unpack in a short amount of time there. So where are you calling in from today?
So I'm based in the beautiful Gold Coast in Australia, and it's an absolute beautiful spot to be out here out in the hinterland.
So, oh, yes.
Surrounded by the rainforests and the elements.
So. Now, tell me something. I know that you were recently on realestate.com.au. You had sold a property. Are you nearby where you used to be, or have you shifted completely?
Yes, that's all in the process at the moment. So that's, relocating and all the joys that come with relocating.
Oh, there are some, are there?
I know. So yes, on realestate.com. I do love my properties and beautiful spots around Australia, but decided to move back down to the coast,
yep.
Back down to the beach lifestyle.
Very nice.
And yeah. Yep.
So what are you looking forward to in your next move? That beach lifestyle is one of them, but what else are you looking forward to?
Mainly just being probably part of the community again. It's quite isolated out in the hinterland area. And as wonderful it is, it's probably a little bit close to the retirement vibe up here. Then I think as much as I love my retirement, I do enjoy being amongst the action for my age, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're saying that, you know, what types of hobbies and sports do you get into? What's your thing?
Well, surprisingly, I actually love supercars. And I do love the luxury vehicle side of things, a Formula One. I have a beautiful Formula One Aston Martin collectible item. I have beautiful Porsches and Mercedes Benz, and
yes.
I do like to go for nice cruises and meet lots of wonderful car enthusiasts. It's actually just recently part of the big charity run that happened in the Gold Coast on the weekend. And it's just a lovely community of people, like-minded people,
yeah.
All enjoy their nice cars. So probably don't look like the car person, but I absolutely appreciate a nice luxury vehicle.
Absolutely. Look, I can't say that I'm a luxury car guy, but I have a collection of mini Mokes, special export Mokes. That's my thing. I love cars too. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Anything collectible is enjoyable, whether it's coins, stamps, cars, vintage things, whatever it is, motorbikes.
Everything and anything goes. Now, tell me a little bit about F1, Daniel Ricciardo. What do you think he's going to do? You think he's going to come back with a storm or what?
Oh, I don't know. I think I think he needed to have stayed with Red Bull right at the very beginning.
Yes.
And just keep to what he knew best. But I think the chase for fame got to him perhaps. And
yep.
I think that's sort of where he went off. But my brother actually went to school with Daniel Ricciardo, knows him quite well, and know the family and where he used to learn racing and things like that. So funny that you mentioned him.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, the small world just got that a little bit smaller.
That's much smaller.
So tell me, Sidel, what are your favourite foods? Do you go out for a meal? What's your thing? Do you like socialising?
I'm a little bit of a recluse these days. I do grow my own organic vegetables and I do my own organic cooking. I'm very much into eating very well and nourishment. And I was vegetarian and vegan, did the whole vegan thing for a while, and I'm not there anymore. But I've sort of experimented with all the different types of things that people like to do. But I do love cooking. It's like one of my switch off things that I enjoy doing. So,
yeah, well, look, you know, you're certainly very busy, so I'm pretty sure you appreciate the downtime. But when you do get some downtime, I love a movie. Do you like a good movie now and then?
Yeah, I do, yes.
What type of movies are you into?
Well, when I say downtime, I think what downtime, but my downtime is sort of just when I go to sleep.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know. I do enjoy watching all the Formula One Netflix stuff as well. I probably enjoy more short little TV series. I love the long historical type movies. I'm never really into the fiction or
that sort of stuff.
Superhero stuff. I really like true stories and historical things, or I love anything to do with horses and the sort of that sort of side of things. I love watching, you know, real life stories, even the sporting.
Yep.
When you see, you know, those rise to fame. I love a good underdog story.
Rags to riches. Yeah. Well, you,
I guess you'd
love the new Ferrari movie that's coming out. Have you seen anything about that?
I have seen the ads, but I haven't watched it yet.
No, so me neither. I'm looking forward to that.
Definitely on the hit list. Yeah, definitely on the hit list.
Now, you touched on horses. Now, when I was growing up, I lived on a farm and we had cattle, we had this and that, we had goats, sheep and all the rest of it. Tell us about life growing up.
So I actually grew up in a country town north of Perth called Lancelin. My father was he's been a martial artist. He's taught probably 30,000 something students in his lifetime. So he had a martial arts school, like a small school, running from our backyard, as well as being a professional fisherman. So he used to bring back all of the fresh caught stuff straight off the boat, caught 1 hour before. And we pretty much grew up with that sort of lifestyle, much beach, fresh fish. My mum was a baker, so we grew up with lots of lovely food. And then we eventually moved back down to Perth because they didn't really want us growing up in such a small country town. So from there, we grew up in Perth and very much was part of our martial arts schools. We spent half our time at home and half our time at the Martial Arts Academy, which is actually one of the biggest in Australia, hundreds of students, and was put into the Hall of Fame, all sorts of things in China and Kuala Lumpur.
Wow.
It's been an amazing journey and very interesting. I would say a very interesting upbringing. I've met so many people, so many masters that have trained with Jet Li and Jackie Chan and trained personally with Bruce Lee, all these sorts of things. We've written so many pieces about all the stories from these masters. And so I kind of grew up with this very international, met flavor. So many different people. Yeah, international flavor. Yeah. We've been to China so many times, all through Southeast Asia and had many unique experiences like that. So my upbringing was very focused around, you know, mindset and discipline and keeping focused. And then also that martial arts side where you very much become – you know, you're very much working with your body, mind and spirit all at once. So we had a very, I would say disciplined, but not disciplined. I don't know. It wasn't regimented, but it was definitely, we learned a lot of amazing skills from that.
I can imagine. Look, I've had a long and illustrious life with martial arts, working under Kancho Sensei Bob Sullivan. And now my children are 9 and 11. They're just about to go for their black belt grading. Now, what they've learned, and I want you to talk to this, is the importance of discipline. What do you think about discipline and why is it so important in our lives?
Oh, gosh, I'm so passionate about this because I used to teach pretty much up until the age of 20-something, 27. I was teaching junior all the kids' classes from the age of 4. And one of the biggest things I noticed was that shift when they would start to respond to the discipline. And discipline is that framework. It gives us boundary. It gives us structure.
Yep.
It gives us something that we have, we can sort of like understand our framework and where our limits are. And I found that the kids that would respond to that discipline, like in the healthy ways, which we had through the martial arts school, it would be, they would just learn that they couldn't get away with everything and that life was not just a game and that, you know, there was things that they, you know, we do have to respect one another. We do have to listen to people. We do have to have general manners. You know, you can't be just throwing a tantrum in the middle of a floor with 30 other children on the, you know, around you. You can't be standing there with your arms crossed and like, you know, life doesn't work that way.
No.
You know? So they learned so many practical life skills, and those skills, discipline is just one of those things that I think it's one of those losing values one of those values that I see getting lost in society today. People don't want the discipline to commit to things, to see, have longevity, to commit to one another, to give their word and hold themselves to that.
Yeah.
And I really think it's one of those skills that is sort of dying, but it's such a unique thing when someone really has a good level of discipline.
You certainly have gone up a notch in my book in terms of your background that you've shared thus far, and I think I'll be sharing this interview with my children just to remind them. I want to stay home and play my computer games today, Daddy. Do you mind? Yes, I do mind. Off you go. Now, you've already talked about some incredibly talented individuals in your life, but I also see some other inspirational people, the likes of Harry Dent, Robert Kiyosaki and the likes, and you've shared the stage with some of these incredible people. Tell us about those experiences.
Oh yes, Rick. Like, it's been an amazing, very organic journey. Something that my brother and I actually co-founded Digital Wealth Group together, and we did not expect it to go the way we did, but in a way we sort of did, because we were very focused on getting the message to as many people as possible. But we were very lucky to have spoken and met these individuals, been on tours with them, shared dinners with them, and had this lovely experience of just hearing life from a different side and really seeing how they work, how they see the world, which is often very different to, well, for me personally, it was very different to the way I saw the world. And so that was very interesting to get those experiences, but more so to see just sort of the following these people had and the influence that they had as well, and the respect that they drew from the audience, and to be part of that whole tour where I said we live more in our suitcase, our suitcase more than we did at home for a period of time. But it was really worth it. It was a whirlwind, and it was absolutely so exciting and very, very tiring at the same time, but extremely rewarding.
Yeah, well, when you go to sleep, you know it's well worthwhile. But tell me, what with all the caliber of the people that you've existed around thus far, what's the commonality between all of them, do you think?
Oh gosh, I've met so many wonderful people. I would definitely say it is their mindset, and it is the thing that is, it's the stories they tell within their mind. It's this undercurrent. I would say discipline is one of them.
Yeah.
But being extremely mindful of what they say, how they think, the actions they take. So it's the way it's not a controlling way, but it's a very disciplined approach to the way they express themselves. I would find that is a commonality amongst all of them.
Yep.
They are very aware. They're very self-aware, very self-aware type people.
And do you find that they're selfless? They're helping others more so than themselves?
Well, you know what's interesting is that many of them had to be extremely selfish to be selfless. And I think this is the biggest thing, the biggest mistake a lot of new, say, business people make is they want to help everyone else before they help themselves.
Mm.
They sort of share from like a half full cup. But I always say to become that role model and be that change yourself first, and then that has like an eminent, it has a, then you almost somewhat have a level of gravity, a level of influence, because you are living in alignment to what you are preaching.
Yeah.
And what I found these people do is they don't need to prove themselves. They don't need to say anything. They don't need to be anything. They just are, and you can feel it.
Yeah.
And they hold it in the way they speak, the way they stand, their confidence. Because they have made it, they have achieved that level of success. And from that level of selflessness, they are very generous with their time, very generous with their knowledge, very generous with what they want to give, because they've got nothing more to prove. They don't. That was the common theme that I found amongst them.
They've climbed the peak to success, and now it's time to give back. Loving the call. Thank you very much, Sidell.
Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about your day. Are you an early riser? What's the daily routine look like?
Well, I used to be a late riser until my partner, and then he was like, no, early mornings are better. And so, I mean, I'm very flexible. I sort of become an early riser now, but I must say my routine gets a bit thrown out in the nature of the industry that I do, because I'm speaking with some people from the US, from the UK, from around the world, and we have time zones going on all the time, time zone conflicts. But I mean, I don't really think about it too much, but no, my day is pretty relaxed. I get to do a lot of, my day is very varied, right from my own personal crypto investing to maybe cooking. I do many things, run the household and do my book writing and of course, Digital Wealth Group presentations. And I've got wonderful team around me that help to keep everything running nicely, which was a big lesson for me, and also delegating and not doing everything myself. And it was when I sort of could change that, my day and life became a lot more free.
That's just the thing, isn't it? Now, tell me a little bit about your first entrepreneurial experience. When were you first exposed to this wonderful world of entrepreneurialism?
Oh, gosh, I feel like I've been an entrepreneur from a young age. My parents actually took us to business workshops from probably the age of 12, 13.
Yep.
And we would go to these money mindset training courses, these motivational speech, sort of those 2 to 3 day workshop environments where you're surrounded by other business owners, and then they would get us to join into the business conversations or the goal setting or the mindset stuff. And so we would be sitting next to, you know, opposite, like I remember sitting opposite women and men when I was about 13, talking about, you know, what are your financial goals, you know, and I think pocket money and
ice cream
money. You know, so, but I would, what I found interesting was I would notice the things that a lot of the adults when I back then would say, and a question in my head was often, how did some of them get to where they were in life, but how did some of them become so lost at life and sort of maybe pessimistic sometimes? Like I noticed there was this theme of like they had almost like regretted things they had done, or there was things where they were found themselves lost and unsure what their next step was. And I always wondered at the back of my mind, what were the choices that they made what got them to that point? Because we sort of have so much potential in our life, but how do we sort of end up in a spot where we feel so stuck, where we feel so lost? And I found that interesting, as well as listening to the success stories in the room, the people that were doing property and stocks. So my mum would actually sign us up to these courses, $3,000 courses, $10,000 courses in our later teens, to learn about stocks, learn about property, learn about even food and health, boot camps for brains, all sorts of different things. So we were around a lot of entrepreneurs from quite a young age. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, I just wonder in all of this, how important, you know, you talked about almost, for lack of better words for it, the misery that can come along with it if you don't set yourself up properly. You know, having wealth is one thing, but there's different types of wealth, health and happiness. Which out of those three do you think is the most important for you?
Oh, I mean, gosh, I always say that our health is the most important, because if we don't have our mental or physical health, we literally cannot do anything.
Yeah.
I remember moments where I've been, you know, feeling really sick and I think I can't do anything and nothing else matters. So health is always my number one. And but I think overall, I feel like we can grow our, say, actual dollars in our bank account, but then can we maintain that wealth, and what are the belief patterns that are running underneath that? And oftentimes we think back in our whole lives, where have we ever learned how to grow our mindset, how to have an abundance mindset, how to attract wealth and keep wealth and grow wealth and hand it down for generations to come.
Yep.
And when you start to think about those things, it's often we probably never have had that. So it's quite interesting that, but many people have this sort of assumed pressure on themselves that we should be able to do that. But I always ask the question, where did you ever learn? You know, so it's a skill many people don't think to acquire for themselves.
Do you, like, just for sake of context, in terms of your educational and professional background, what does that look like? And did you learn more once you left, you know, quote unquote, schooling than when you stepped into real life?
Well, I actually went to university. So I actually graduated with a degree in maths and physics. So I did go through the whole, you know, high school, graduate year 12, I did 4 years of university.
Yep.
Then I was, you know, doing lecturing and I was running labs and I was doing those sorts of things. I've always been like a teacher, I guess.
Yep.
So that was more my journey. But then after that, I went very much into business and I was mentored by a lot of very successful mentors, I was lucky to align myself with. It was sort of fluky chances across
habit of
meeting at the coffee shop type thing and you know, timing alignment sort of stuff. And my 20s was spent very much in that business entrepreneurial world, and crypto sort of came later in my sort of later 20s. And by the age of 30, my brother and I had retired off crypto. And then that was where people were asking us, how did you, you know, how? So there's been a lot of self-education. I would say I've never worked for someone else. Actually, I have worked for someone else for about 3 months when I was a teenager. Always worked for myself.
Yeah. Now tell me, you've probably done so much already, but do you have a bucket list and what's on it?
Do I have a bucket list?
It's hard to say, isn't it?
Oh my God. Like I feel like so much of the bucket list items I've been able to do with crypto and yep. since our finances, like a lot of the things people would love to have on their bucket list, or maybe like travel the world or snowboard somewhere or have a supercar, live in a luxurious home, go on fancy holidays, like all these sorts of things, designer shopping, or maybe materialistic sides of things, or yep. maybe it's been able to write a book one day or do this. So I feel like I've got through a lot of my bucket list, that I would find my priorities are probably more changing into to family and going more into my having a family and things like that. So yep. my bucket list is becoming more of a slightly different to the material.
Oh look, no, it could be physical, could be spiritual, could be whatever yep. is important to you. We're not biased in any way, shape or form. Now tell us a little bit about what makes life worthwhile for you right now. What's happening in your world that every day you get up and you go, you know what, this is what I'm living for?
Oh, great question. I mean, I'm very grateful for my life, and I do believe, for example, like I wake up and I'm excited for, the 5,000 projects that I have going at once. So I never is a dull moment in my life, but every day is something unique and different. So whether it's, organizing like something surprise for my family, like a beautiful holiday for my parents, or perhaps it's something for my partner, or the other thing would be like in my presentations that I do for Digital Wealth Group, I do a lot of money mindset, I do free inspirational talks, like all sorts of different things. And maybe it's creating the content for that today, or maybe it's adding another chapter into my next book, or yeah. Whatever that may be. I just think it's more so my service that actually gets me up in the morning. And I feel very grateful to have been alignment to the service that is in complete alignment to my purpose. So my purpose to teach, to inspire, to lead others. And every day I'm fulfilling that in various forms.
So tell me, when was it that your brother and yourself decided to create Digital Wealth Group? What was the conversation like?
that was a funny day, and I'll never forget the moment. I pulled up in my brother's driveway and he was on the phone, and he wanted to hang up the phone quickly before I heard the conversation. And he says, "I know you're going to want to do this, but I don't know if I want to do it, but I know you're not going to let me off the hook." And he says, "We've just been asked to share our crypto experience," because people were starting to hear about these two crypto guys, my brother and I, this crypto brother and sister that was cracking it in crypto. How are they doing it? And then we got a phone call. It was to speak in front of about 60 investors, but the catch was it was a few days away, and we had no material. Like, we had to create 12 presentations from scratch. It was the hot seat. And we said, yeah, why not? Because that's whatever. Like, we're cool with that. So late nights, early mornings, we thought it was a bit of a fun challenge. We ended up doing that, and that sort of created one thing after the other. And it was almost that we were asked to come present at these different things, and that eventually was like a word of mouth ripple effect. And it was such an organic beginning to this journey that we never really had a conversation. Okay, let's begin now. It was just... We sort of ended up being pulled and guided in that direction. So it was very much, I feel, we were always meant to do this. We're always meant to be the ones in Australia to educate people on crypto. We're always meant to be the ones that would help people do this safely. I really feel like it was like that was our call and role for the cryptocurrency market. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's just effortlessly flown so well. And we've attracted so many wonderful clients and people and coaches and team members to create such an incredible community that it is today. But I think the whole thing came because we were so passionate from the beginning. We had a burning desire to share what we knew. We were really passionate about helping people. We loved seeing people crack their first, good profit in the market. And that was, I think, just naturally because we love that experience, the byproduct of that was our service and business.
That's a beautiful segue into the core of the call, Sido. And I'd love to go into some nuts and bolts of crypto and cryptocurrencies, because there's certainly a lot to learn for somebody who has never heard of this space before. It's very difficult not to know of it, be aware of it at least, but the details often elude people, I myself included. Now, starting off, what is crypto and why should everyday people consider investing in it?
Well, it's a, I mean, I could sit here for the, how many hours?
How many hours? Right? All day, let's go.
I think the longest talk I did was about 12 hours.
Oh, goodness, no. We've got nine.
Well, mainly, Rick, it's about having, crypto is an asset class that doesn't require you to have a financial background. It doesn't require you to have investment experience, to be a trader, to read charts. It doesn't care what your previous investment history has been like. I say it's an asset for the people, and it's an asset because it's so, it is simple to enter, even though we're told it isn't. And it's fastest, it is the fastest appreciating asset in the world. So why would we not have a percentage of our portfolio, even if it's a few hundred dollars, $1,000 into this market, just to let us, to let it prove to you what it can do for yourself? And that barrier to entry, people are quite fearful. They think of the volatility. But the unique thing about this asset class is you don't have to break the bank to get in. You know, you can start with a few hundred dollars. It's not hundreds of thousands of dollars upfront capital to say go into property or whatever these other markets can offer. Crypto has a very, very easy entry point in that regard and can be highly rewarding in a very short period of time.
There you go. There's a very succinct response. Thank you very much. Now, I don't know necessarily that what I want to ask you is in any particular sequence, so forgive me if I sort of go out of sequence a little bit here.
That's okay.
I'm wondering what blockchain is and why it's relevant to know how it works when you're investing.
Great question. And the short answer is you don't really need to know how blockchain works. It's sort of like, you know, that how does the internet work, but we just use it.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the internet works, you know,
no,
how does
me
that
neither.
And I'm sure many people are in the same boat. I don't really know how my car works, but it drives and it drives well.
That's good enough.
So in regard, like there's two aspects of the crypto. You've got the utility, which is the function of the market, but then there's the investing into the assets. And it's another way to think of it is like, think of like Apple. You don't have to use their computers, their laptops, their headsets, their iPhones, but you can invest in the company itself. And there are thousands of cryptos, let's say there are thousands of apples, you could say, that you can invest into that represent that technology and that growth. And so in crypto, we go for the innovation, we go for where the major growth is happening. And then we buy, let's say, those cryptos assigned to that major growth and innovation. And then that's how you hear about people making that great success in the crypto market.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I've heard you say it's better to be proactive, not reactive. So how does that apply to the crypto investment space?
You have followed my one-liners. I have all these one-liners.
There's another book.
Yeah, there's another book. Yeah, it's actually, I know it's in my book. I very much talk about being proactive because many people chase the euphoria of the market and unfortunately buy in around the top. So what happens when you do that is you lock in losses for years to come. And when I say years, it's when until the market picks back up again.
Yeah.
And I always say, you know, for example, here where we sit in March of 2024, we have, you know, we have upside potential in front of us. So I say, where are we relative to the mountain? Like if you think of Mount Everest, you know, are we going to buy right at the very top? Or are we going to look at the bottom and look up and say, look at all that upside we have in us. So we have in front of us. So when I say be proactive is to take action and have your positions in before we start to see the market really go parabolic, because many people get emotionally invested and that's where people make a lot of mistakes and that's where people, you end up hearing this, the naysayers and all, people lose money and ABC, and it's really because they enter at any time when you shouldn't enter at any time. There are really strategic times to enter and it's actually more important than the coins that you intend to buy.
Ah, there you go. Now, we've touched on mindset quite a bit, but I suspect there's a slight difference between, you know, let's call it a typical mindset and a money mindset. How is that different?
Well, I say how can we have the easiest way to say this is how could we have a $5 million crypto portfolio with a $5,000 mindset? Because eventually we're going to rewind that money all the way back to about the same level as our money mindset.
Yep.
So as much as people are investing and learning about the crypto market, I always say because the crypto market can generate wealth quickly. Like people do use analogies of winning like a lottery, that sort of thing. And that obviously doesn't happen for everyone, but there is a process where you can acquire wealth in relatively shorter periods of time compared to other assets. So people do come into money perhaps that they've never seen, but then their money mindset, what happens is all those negative beliefs underneath can rewind that. So they might, things like, oh, this happened too quick, it's too good to be true, money, this won't last, I don't know how to cash it out, I'm scared to cash it out. All these sorts of things come up and we sort of end up being our own worst enemy. So money mindset is very crucial, and that, yes, there is mindset, but particularly the way we approach our money is significant in crypto investing.
So it seems to me that, you know, having a mindset or believing you have a mindset's, I guess, half the answer to my next question. But how do you actually know when you've adopted the right money mindset to get us to that, I guess, that $5 million mindset?
So I always say that it's not a flick of a switch. It's a journey.
Yeah.
And often it's just one of awareness. So really just asking questions, you know, and keeping very much, as my mentors used to say to me, having ruthless self-evaluation. So how do I feel right now? What are my thoughts towards this? Am I taking the right steps? Is there any way in which I'm sabotaging this? For example, I'm not taking the time to manage my assets well. I'm not storing them right. Or maybe I'm all of a sudden getting busier than I should to avoid, you know, the wealth creation aspect of my portfolio or following the market and what's happening right now. So there's certain behaviors where simply just stopping to observe what we're actually doing will highlight a lot of where we're at. And often we do know if we are showing up for ourselves, if we are in alignment, because we can sort of self-reflect on our own behaviors to see if we're on that journey. So that's how I always say, that's one of the things. But you do sort of know when you are moving closer because you find that your timing is better. You find that you're proud of your actions, that you're not allowing these sort of constant negative stories and thoughts to be lingering in the mind all the time, or getting frustrated at your own self or others. I find that when we're doing the opposite of that is when we find that we're more in alignment to a healthier money mindset.
You know, because we can be easily influenced by social media, and then unfortunately it can be a bit of a demon for those who are looking at this space. And I wonder, given that, what is it, April 2024, there's going to be a halving, therefore the mining of Bitcoin, for example, is going to become that much harder and therefore drive up prices. Correct me if I'm wrong. So in terms of, you know, preparing for those types of things, should we be, I guess this is more tactical than strategic, should we be focusing on the main coins, the stable coins, the new coins coming through? How does somebody choose? There's just a plethora of options out there. And that's what really gets me really confused about this space.
Yeah, and rightfully so. But the key is to diversify. So you have a small section in your conservative cryptos, like your Bitcoin, your Ethereum, and then you diversify into what we call the more speculative medium to higher risk cryptocurrencies, which are representing the growth of the market. So if we want to know where we're going to get long-term value, look for the growth sectors. So anywhere like new blockchains coming to market, how do we get exposure to them? New DeFi technology, how do we get exposure to that? The metaverse and AI, what particular cryptos represent those sort of, say, 3 to 4 major growth sectors, and how do I have just a slice of each in a portfolio? So that way you're well diversified, and if one sort of drops, the other might lift. You have a nice balanced approach, but then you also have a nice piece of that pie, which is in your what we would call conservative cryptos, like your Bitcoin and Ethereum. And that's, many people think, oh, I'm just going to go buy all Bitcoin, but they miss this huge growth opportunity in all of the other major sectors that are going to particularly, in my opinion, do very well in this upcoming bull market.
You know what? The more I speak with you, Sadil, the more I realize this could be a 12-hour call, because I'm thinking about the utility of selection. You know, you look at a crypto and you think, just like Bitcoin initially was, you know, touted as being the next the currency that you'd go and buy your bread and milk with, it's not become that. It's become a store of wealth, just like gold has become, I believe. Maybe I'm wrong. So how do you, what is this a matter of research? You actually stepping back and going, well, look, XRP, Ripple, whatever. You go, what's the utilitarian value of this coin? And is that the decision-making rule that you follow? How do you research which ones to get involved with?
Yeah, well, firstly, I look for where is the most of the growth in this in the crypto market sector, and that's right. always going to be new blockchains, decentralized finance, the metaverse, AI. So that narrows, you know, the choice of thousands of coins down to probably, you know, a couple of hundred very good coins. Yeah. And then you go, of those sectors, which are the best performing cryptocurrencies that are within those sectors? So now we're not so much looking at 1,000 different crypto, you know, 12,000-15,000 different cryptos. We're looking at 3 to 4 sectors, and then what are the best performing cryptos within those sectors? And yeah. that's how we sort of cherry pick. And then if we can sort of get 1 to 2 cryptos from each one of those sectors, we then now have a portfolio of 10 to 15 cryptos, and that is the sweet spot for a nice portfolio that is manageable, and that can really go through a really good bull market, and you can sort of see the growth of each one of those particular coins that you're holding.
So, you know, I'm not a day trader. I'm not into Forex. I'd love to be, but, you know, it's fairly dangerous for me at least. but is this a buy and hold situation, or are you talking about doing, you know, quote unquote, the day trading with crypto and cryptocurrencies, or a bit of both?
Really good question. We don't teach trading. So right. we yep. believe that long-term buy and hold strategies over a bull market, entering at the right time in the right growth sectors, is one of the best blueprints for success. It's how my brother and I retired at such a young age.
Beautiful.
How we've retired many hundreds of students. and that to me is the success formula. Many people chase shiny objects. They trade, they lose money, they do bots, they get up into these third party apps that promise all these returns. All of it is shiny object chasing, but the key is self-custody investment strategy that is over 2 to 4 years in growth sectors with great utility that have the opportunity to, you know, we've seen people do 10Xs, 50Xs, 100Xs on even as high as 10,000Xs on cryptos that have great utility. And that doesn't happen overnight, but it can happen over a 2 to 4 year bull market cycle. And so it's a complete different way to look at crypto, but you certainly don't need to be a trader. I don't look at candlesticks. I don't look at trading charts. You know, I simply follow the market.
Let me just say how refreshing that is, because the anxiety that huge. I have felt and others have felt that I have spoken with, and the pain that can come along with not knowing which way to go about it. And again, coming back to social media, getting bombarded by paid advertisements from guys in their early 20s claiming to make you millions with this bot and this third-party software. So you're suggesting stay away from those types of technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you've got, you know, 10,000 people using the same bot with the same algorithm. You're technically pushing the price against yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone's using the same algorithm to acquire. So therefore, you're pushing the price up against yourself. But yes, fundamentally, self-custody, you own the private keys, you hold 10 to 15 cryptos in growth sectors, you ride the bull market. Great levels of success can be achieved from doing that. And you don't have to be a trader. You don't have
that's
to be
so good.
Sitting up at midnight.
Yeah, crying in your hands. I've just sold the house, my beautiful wife. You what? Now, in terms of inflating of the market, we've seen pump and dumps before. We've seen terms like crypto whales that go into Discord groups. And I know, I've been in there. I've seen it happen. They've said, guess what? We're doing this. And, you know, you can have one or two, the 80-20 rule, people in a complete market sector of a typical of one crypto really quickly inflate the market, then dump it. What do you say about whales? First of all, can you explain what a whale is and why they can be, I guess, detrimental?
Yep. So whales is the silver lining. So whales are large crypto holders. So they typically hold millions of one token, or, you know, depending on how many of one token you can own.
Yeah.
Bitcoin whales are people that hold, you know, billions of dollars of Bitcoin, and they can influence the market significantly. So they can, for example, do a big sell. They can take a lot of profits and what we call dump the market, which means we drop price.
Yeah.
And people sort of, you know, frantically, they can trigger big sell-offs, meaning they can trigger an actual bear market to begin after a bull market. So there is no way of stopping those sorts of events, but they don't always happen in 5 seconds, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Typically, it's it's a pattern that you're observing. And there's also Twitter groups like whale alerts and things like that, where you can sort of track the activity of what the whales are doing. So it's a little bit like a movement within a movement.
Yeah, yeah.
But the positive side to that is it doesn't take much for them to, for example, allocate a percentage of their portfolio into a crypto that you may own, and you can potentially see your portfolio double, triple overnight, like I've seen that happen to myself. And then you have the opportunity in that moment to then cash out if you liked. And so whilst we can see that sort of price volatility, the volatility is actually the game that is crypto, and people are scared of the volatility. But I say, did you know the volatility is your best tool in the crypto market? It is what makes it such a unique asset. It is what makes it so profitable.
Yeah.
So the whales, yes, they are there, and they lurk in the deep oceans, you could say. But they are also provide huge value because they allow a huge crypto potentially pump and generate life-changing wealth for many people as well.
Yeah.
And it's just about being strategic and not sitting on huge profits and being greedy and taking profit when you see some.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say now. You know, there, I guess in a longer time frame, Sidell, there is an element of trading per se, but it's not like like the day trading that we've touched on, but there it is important to take profit.
Well, I say that, you know, some people can sit on these huge portfolios and it's really just the number the market owes you. It's an IOU.
Yeah.
It's not really, you're not a crypto millionaire, so to say, until you actually materialize that wealth. And actually learning how to sell is a different skill set in itself, because 90% of it is based in human emotions. So that's why I always say we need to have a plan, you know, not to be greedy. And also, yes, there is a degree of trading because you somewhat are selling and buying and looking for those opportunistic times to sell. But most of it comes down to looking at the fundamentals in the market at the moment. So you go, how loud is the crypto market? How many news stations are promoting it? Did my taxi driver talk about it today? You know, what's the price of Bitcoin sitting at? How overinflated is my portfolio right now? What type of gains am I sitting on? If I'm looking at my portfolio 10 times a day and feeling euphoric, They're all triggers, okay? So while we might not be a trader, we might have the triggers to go, okay, I think I'm going to take 5% of my profit out now in profits. And that might mean 5 grand, 50 grand, it might mean a million, whatever it is.
Yep.
But it's the discipline of taking something to materialize something else, not just have it all sitting in the crypto market.
Absolutely. So, what you know, you're turning things like the cryptocurrency that you've got some cream on, you're taking that out and then you're converting it into real estate and that sort of asset allocation. What sort of percentage of asset allocation would you have in your portfolio for crypto?
Well, this is the thing. They say a millennial millionaires hold typically over about 75% of their portfolio. Millennial millionaires, that's right, hold about 75% of their portfolio in cryptocurrencies,
wow,
which is astounding. And if you think of there's about $68 trillion worth of baby boomer money to be handed down just in the States alone to millennials over the next decade or two.
Yep.
You look at where the millennials are investing, and that in itself is a huge catalyst to where this market is going as well. So a lot of the time, I mean, where, for example, myself, I'm most heavily invested into the crypto market, but I also diversify and into store value items. I love paintings and precious metals, then also collectible cars, and then property, you know. So how do I move money from one asset to another? And it is a nice feeling to preserve profit in a different way, slightly outside of the crypto market, not sort of have all those eggs in one
basket. It's very interesting.
Have some tangible things.
It's very interesting that you talk this way. I read a book recently about the Rothschilds and those who actually control 80% of the globe's wealth, and that's exactly how they distribute their wealth and maintain it through the eons of time, through generations of family. So you're definitely onto something there, and that's something for everybody to be taking away from this wonderful call today. Now, tell me a little bit about, leaving crypto on exchanges. Is that a dangerous thing to do? And what are wallets, and why should we consider using those?
Yeah, great question. And that really comes down again to the self-custody. And I always say exchanges, look at them as shopping centers, okay? So we buy stuff, but we don't leave it in the shopping center, do we?
No.
So we bring it home, you know, and when we bring it home, we're technically in the crypto world, we're putting it into what we call a wallet. And those wallets are what we call hot or cold storage wallets, but basically there's a safe place to store our assets. So anything like the Trezor, the Ledger, they're the sort of brand names for those yep. Wallets. And that's where you want to be moving that money, because that if you don't have the private keys, which is the ownership of that crypto, you typically don't own it. And what we saw in 2022 was the sort of mismanagement of lots of exchange CEOs and the sort of a bit of a domino effect of these sorts of collapses. And this is the thing. You hear about people losing money or getting scammed, and it's typically because they're not being responsible with their funds.
Yeah.
When you simply move your money off the exchange into a wallet you control, you've now removed yourself from 99% of the scam narrative out there. Okay. And that 1% then comes down to where are you storing that wallet? Okay. You
yep.
leaving it in the top drawer. We've
scribbling
your private keys down.
Oh, what's this USB here, Daddy? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so really it comes down to our own management of that, but always look at exchanges as a touch point, as a shopping experience, but never as a place where you store your crypto ever.
So given all the questions that I could potentially ask of you, I'm putting the needs of my audience in mind, because they're probably lapping this up, and I really appreciate it, Sidhu. I really do. If you are a brand new person to this, I know where I'd go. I'd come and see you. But if you're a new person and you want to do this on your own, what is the very first thing that you would recommend a newbie do to get involved?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing before you buy anything is to have the attitude of being a contrarian. And that is my single biggest piece of advice I give to every new investor into the market. And to be a contrarian means to be opposite to groupthink. And if you can do that continuously through the crypto market, you'll be successful. And the second thing from then is working out what are you going to allocate into the market, and what's a safe number for you? Is it $500? Is it $2,000? Is it maybe $10,000? What does that number look like for you? And keep it a number where you're not afraid to have a play with it and see what happens. And then, of course, get actually onto an exchange, register, buy a bit of crypto and pop it onto a wallet. And then from there, you can pretty much ride this wave and sort of track it and see how it's performing. So they are my sort of, like I would say, a short list of things that opening. Someone could immediately yep. do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, because then my next leading question would be, you've got this wallet, you've got this little bit of crypto, a couple of bits of this and that. How long before I go and actually look at the graphs and go, wow, I'm actually going to the moon. Do I get rid of some of it? You know, when do you know that? Do you start joining groups and getting training from yourself, or do you join your newsletter, which I have? What's the next step from there?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do provide a lot of free education through our newsletter that's on Digital Wealth Group. So you can get a lot of insight into what is going on with the market. You kind of get a general consensus of where we're at. But it's really about looking at those numbers and saying, you know, am I sitting on a lot of good profit right now? Is my portfolio on a 5X or a 10X right now? And am I being greedy? Like where else would I be sitting on a 10X and not take some profit?
Yeah.
You know? So and it's really just looking at those numbers. So you can actually have some applications where you can track your assets. You can also reach out to us if you're needing support. We do one-on-one coaching and help people get into the market, help diversify, get their wallets set up. Things like that. So, you know, we do offer that one-on-one handholding for the person who's a bit nervous. But then if you're adventurous and you're feeling like you'd like to explore this space on your own,
yep.
You can also do that, and you can follow our free newsletter and things like that. So
do you have a course?
There are many, many ways to get in.
Do you also have a course? Is that
yes.
a thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the cryptocurrency fast launch program, which gives you a short list of coins, it gives you a model portfolio, it gives you all the market updates and pretty much all of the absolute necessities you need to maintain and get through a bull market, when to buy, when to sell, the weekly market news and what's happening, and then sort of how to also create passive income from the cryptos that you're holding. So how do I actually take these cryptos and make them work for me? Just like you would in a bank, lock your money up and get paid interest, you can do that in crypto as well. So there's some many, many ways that you can like multiply and scale your portfolio.
Yeah.
So, and then within that course, you also get private coaching. So you get half a dozen one-on-one sessions, one-hour calls with your coach, going through your portfolio, setting everything up, clicking and setting up on the exchanges, doing all the nitty-gritty. And then you get training over a whole year, masterclasses and just interesting talks and slowly the learning comes after. And there is a bit of a timing piece when it comes to crypto. I always say that another one of my one-liners is that the market waits for no one.
Yep.
So there is a timing piece. And I do say we have a window of from here we are, start of March, roughly about 3 to 5 months before we really start to see that parabolic growth in the market.
Yep.
So I do say if you are looking to get in, the timing is now.
Yep.
I would not be procrastinating. And if you really want to ride this 18-month bull market that we've just entered into, we are only at the very tip of the very beginning. And I would say it'd be very rewarding for those action takers out there.
Very exciting. There you go. That's going to be a lead in for sure and certain. Now, I wonder, who are you attracting to these services the most? Are they mum and dad investors? Who do you work with?
Yeah, great question. So we work with mainly, for example, people like, I would say, like my mum and dad, people that are not tech savvy, perhaps. Maybe they're a bit nervous of the whole digital space. So people that are mainly wanting to get exposure, they're, I would say, maybe they're retired or they have self-managed super funds. I'd like to put it to work a little bit better. Maybe they have an investment base that would like to get into the market but are simply not willing to go through. So we find the 20 and the 30-year-olds are pretty much sort of nut everything out themselves, and they'll go down to the deep forums of the web and learn everything in the Discord groups. But the type of client we work with simply don't like that. So they might be maybe in the later half of their life, and then they don't want to be learning all the tech side. They find the risk is too high, so they would like to have someone coach them through that process. So that is typically who we're working with. So we even have one of our most successful students. They're in their 80s, husband and wife team, actually from around Brisbane location.
Fantastic.
And, they're fully retired and they've got about 8 grandchildren, and then now they've got generational wealth. And they make the joke that they need to be reminded of what they're invested into on every coaching call, because that it's just too much to follow along for them. But that's the kind of level of support that we give. Yeah.
You know, and I can feel a level of trust. And I've spoken with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are doing incredible things. And you know, you get a feeling about someone, and you get a feeling that you can trust them and the people behind them, because at the end of the day, Sidell, you're leading the charge, you're the face of the business, and everything you say, people take notice of, and it's a real credit to you, the work that you're doing. So let's talk about your book, The All-Time High. Let's break it down so that people can not only find it, but they can understand what they're going to get from it and whether or not that would be the best place for them to start to learn about the crypto space.
Yeah, absolutely. So All-Time High was a piece about the 7 years that we've been educating for about 7 years now. And I found it was a collection. I needed to put together a collection of all of our sort of 101s of investing into this market. But I would call it is the most conversational piece that you're probably ever going to read about getting into the crypto market. So I call it the fireside chat of about this asset class. And it's a really good piece. It addresses all of the main fears that people have. It addresses the bullish catalysts that will drive this market, the sort of introductory steps to get into this market, as well as our money mindset. And it has a whole range of wonderful success stories of people beginning with nothing in this space and building their wealth up, all of our favorite one-liners and investment takeaways. So it's full of absolute gold, especially for someone who's never entered this market. They're feeling nervous. They might be a bit skeptical. It's a great piece to just create your first foundation for getting into this market.
There you go. Very great, concise summary of the book. Thank you very much. And when people want to, find that book, is that an Amazon thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Amazon, Booktopia, Barnes & Noble, you can get it from whichever one is your favorite book distributor. So it's our All-Time High, The Power of Cryptocurrencies and How to Invest the Right Way.
We talked about what lights you up, what drives you to get out of bed in the morning, but how do you feel when you see the people that you're working with get results with your methods?
Oh, look, I mean, this is the thing. We talk about legacy, and we talk about generational wealth through cryptocurrency, and what is our legacy that we want in life. And I look at this as a legacy that will live on for hundreds of years from the people, from the wealth that people are creating here today. And it is such a rewarding and wonderful experience to see people that can remove themselves from the fear narratives of financial pressures, of paying mortgages, of the bills, of all of the economic uncertainty, and to all of a sudden push all that aside and say, you know what, I've got my life back, I've got freedom back, I've got my time, I've got my wealth. And that is a gift. That is an incredible thing to give to someone. And that is why I love what I do. That is why I could talk for 12 hours on crypto, because it's an endless giving game, the crypto market. Absolutely. I always say it gives to you, crypto gives to you what you give back to it. And that's why I love talking about it and love sharing.
Well, I can tell that you do, because you light up you throughout the call in different aspects, and your knowledge is far superior to anything that I've seen on the show in the past, and I'd like to thank you for that. Now, when people want to take that first step, where are they going to find you? What website? Are you on LinkedIn? Where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first place we go to digitalwealthgroup.com.au. You can subscribe right there. You also get invitations to our 90-minute free trainings. I do host a monthly live webinar, which is all about the market and what's happening and how where we're sitting right now. So we have those running all the time. So if you're subscribed to Digital Wealth Group, you'll be sure to get all of those invitations. And if you do need to engage with any of our services, maybe you're wanting to get your portfolio set up and into this market yesterday, certainly reach out and we can offer and discuss those packages for you and what we can do to get that going for you.
Well, there you go. In summary, if you're on this call today, I'll be making it very easy for you to get into this space, because I'm going to be providing the links back to Sedell and her wonderful team and all the work that she's done, and to the books and so on and so forth. So make sure you do go ahead and check out all of that information. With all that being said, Sedell, this has been an absolute cracker of a call. Thank you very much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful, and thanks to all of our listeners.